All right, welcome to another episode of Beyond the Classroom, where we talk all things well-being, parenting, and obviously boys' education here at Villanova College, live at the Villanova Studios. They're very fancy at the moment. We've moved into another
Villanova
room.
Villanova Studios.
The sun's setting over
beautiful.
The... It is absolutely nice. Beautiful. And you would have heard that that voice there. It's look, I like to use... We use a bit of hyperbole, don't we, Sheridan?
We do, this, Mr. Spurigle.
Podcast, Justin. But, this may be
this
the best.
This is the podcast of all podcasts, and don't mean to set you up too much for success here, Maggie, but we are very, very excited to be bringing the one, the only champion of boys, Maggie Dent. Welcome. Do you cheering?
I don't have a cheering thing, but we'll just clap anyway. Okay. Welcome, Maggie, to the podcast. We're very grateful that we've been able to get you as a guest on the show.
We are so lucky to
know. Super stoked that we could fit this in. You know, it's not my first rodeo doing podcasts, but I feel that sometimes that's often a way with busy parents. They often listen to a podcast while they go riding or walking or cooking or whatever, and so sometimes they actually get more information via podcast or my audiobook. So funny that I can be recognized by my voice ordering a coffee and they've never met me and they go, Maggie Dent's in here because of her voice, because apparently I have a distinctive
voice. Yes. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, Maggie.
No, well, I got kicked out of the choir in year three because my voice was too deep, so on the music.
I've got nodules, so I was not doing any choir. Anyway, we're not making this about me, we're making this about you, Maggie, because as you it's very hard to pin Maggie down. She is a plethora of knowledge about all things boys. She was a teacher. She has authored about 11 books, and just as I was saying before, Maggie just gets it. You just get boys, and it is just so refreshing to hear somebody in this space, because let's be honest, we've got a bit of a problem. And the boys need our help. And Maggie just spent an hour and a half talking to our staff about how we can work with our boys, and she's speaking to the community, those lucky enough to get tickets on Wednesday. But we just thought that we'd bring Maggie in here just for a little bit to ask a couple of questions that maybe our parents can find useful.
Go for it.
Do you want to kick off?
Oh, happy to kick off. Okay. And I think you kind of said it there, that our boys need help, but so do our parents.
Exactly.
And it's such a difficult time to sort of navigate. And in the modern world, boys, you know, when you're doing your presentation, you put a bit of a summary of your the boys' crisis, and there was so much in there to sort of unpack and sort of to delve into. But what's the biggest challenge that you're seeing in your work, particularly with adolescent boys? And on the other side of that, what's the hope piece that we can stick to?
Oh, look, there's one big thing that people are probably thinking this is just now that this has been happening, but 2002 we identified a boys' crisis in Australia, and basically identified it and did nothing. And the OECD is calling it a crisis in boys. So this is not just Australia and it's not just now. What we've failed to do as we've moved into this, shall we say, very modern digital world is that it's displaced some of the things that help grow healthy boys. And that is hours and hours of playing where there's no adult nearby, doing what we would probably as mothers think is dumb and potentially risky. But in those moments, our boys have what we call natural consequences, where they realise, whoa, gee, that hurt, I'm not going to do that again. And we've taken that away. So they're not playing as much with all kids, but they're not playing with boys. And then we've decided that the world is too dangerous.
So that's why we've taken it away.
So we're taking it away, and yet what we've done is we've thrown them into a digital world with no boundaries, which is causing possibly more harm than the dangerous world that we used to have. And then it's like the parents of today's boys, it's not a generation gap, it's a generation chasm, because not only was technology only in its infancy then, but it has escalated so fast. And so the potential harms are even more significant, especially in boys in that early puberty window from probably 12 to 16, where they're most vulnerable. And, of course, that's exactly a key window at school to try and build character and get
test
them engaged.
Boundaries.
And I think parents are just worried because the whole world keeps painting our boys as something wrong with them. which makes me absolutely furious, because there's nothing wrong with our boys. Our boys are different to girls and their needs are different. And until we recognise that both within education and also within society, the denigration of that gender and that age isn't helping them. Mm. And it makes it harder for them to figure out how can I be a better version of myself. Yeah. And that's hard, because we all want them all to one day work out how to be a good human.
Mm.
Well answered.
This is not your first rodeo, man.
No.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the second one. I feel this as well as a parent of a boy. We often worry that we're getting it wrong during the teenage years, that we're not doing the right thing, that we're overprotecting, that we're helicopter parenting, that we're not giving them what is one thing, Maggie, that parents can do that has the biggest positive impact on their relationship with their son? Only one. I know this is a very difficult question.
Yeah, but I'm just going to go, no one's nailing parenting, never have. You never will. And adolescence has always been bumpy and tricky and confusing. So let's just bat for all parents. And I had like three teenage boys at one point. Well, that was a lot of badly behaving penises in my house, I can give you. And a lot of smelliness. And so I'm all over the fact that they can be, I think it is a difficult time of development. In actual fact, it's a bit like toddlerhood with steroids. Because the same things are happening, massive brain growth and remodeling, but autonomy and risk are all the same. So if you got annoyed when they were a toddler, it's happening right now. Okay, so the number one thing is that our boys are not tough, that there's a fragility to boys on so many levels that we just negate because of the traditional patriarchy that sort of tried to convince us that boys and men are just tough. And what I've seen over the years is just how fragile they are psychologically, and without a real understanding of the changes that happen to them, they can just see that when they make those poor impulsive choices and they've left the backpack on the bus yet again with the Mac here and the phone, and you're going, oh my God, where's your blazer, for the 58th time, and no, don't leave the milk out on the bench, and put the empty one back. Like all these things that irritate the hell out of us parents, all of those things have been happening always. It's that if they know that you are capable of loving them when they muck up, if you are capable of holding a safe space for them, no matter what, and that's the phrase I keep using a lot, is I want you to keep telling your boy there's nothing he can do that will stop you loving him. No matter how bumpy it gets, no matter the poor choices, there's nothing, no matter what. I want it to be what you say to them when they go out, as they get older to a party, or they're riding their e-bike to footy training, or they've gone, no matter what, because I have worked with families whose boys didn't come home. And they said, I wish I'd said something different. So every time, put a note on their pillow, write it on their mirror. Just tell them, no matter what, mate, we've got you. We're coming for you. As soon as anything bad happens, call us. First thought, call us. Not that first thought, don't call my mum, call my dad. You can call us and we're coming. We're coming for you and we'll come for your friends, no matter what.
But they do so many frustrating things. And as teachers and as parents, you feel like they just don't listen. But it's not that. They don't hear it. Just don't even hear it.
And that's – and I do remember this beautiful story. Somebody read to 14-year-olds, and I got the 14-year-old son to read the chapter in From Boys to Men about how the brain changes impact you. And he got up and he said, yeah, good one, Mum. It would have been nice to know about it before it happened. And I feel that when boys get to understand that most of this is out of their control and that it's been happening forever, not that we want Dad to tell any more doom and gloom terrible stories, because that's not always helpful, because they often want to copy those. It reassures them that I'm not bad and I'm not stupid, because what they do when they muck up, they know they disappoint their parents particularly, and they don't want to disappoint their favourite teachers either. It is incredible that the weight of parental expectations on all adolescents, girls and boys, is way too high, because they don't have a prefrontal lobe that works really well. they're not capable of deep insight and thought. They're not as capable of motivating themselves to pass tests. They can't plan for their future. It is a slowly evolving process of maturation. And if we can keep that in mind, and I love it when I hear a boy say to, you know, or the mum say to the boy, yes. No, the boy say to mum, it's just my brain. I'll get there one day. You know, and
hang in there, mum. Yeah, we'll get there.
Like I had a really pretty clever, cute number four son, and he said to me one day, mum, this whole bit about the prefrontal, I think you've got it wrong because look how responsible I am. I'm 19. I've never had an accident in my car. I exercise. I eat well. I'm studying. I've got great friends. And he took a bottle of ginger beer out of the fridge and shook it up and down and then opened it. It just went everywhere.
In the same conversation.
In the same, and he looked at me and went,
case in point.
Okay, all right. It's not finished.
I'll be there soon.
Yeah, right? And yep. I feel if we can come alongside them with that sense of, I put three things for all teenagers. If you come alongside them, firstly with calmness. So the first thing we tend to do when our kids muck up is get angry. Apparently it's a biological wiring. If you lost your toddler in Woolies, you're going to get angry at them before you actually come with compassion. So you need to find your own calm before you come to that moment. And the second is curious. Boys respond to this curious voice that says, so what were you actually trying to do when you broke that window, mate? Like, and he goes, I don't know. Whereas if you come at him aggro, then you shut the conversation down.
That's
and
so
then,
true.
And then when you come with compassion going, oh, it sucks, doesn't it, you know, when you make those mistakes. But we'll work with you.
Whereas girls, yeah. I think when I heard you speak, girls will sit there and explain and take you through all
absolutely.
Of their thought processes.
Absolutely.
And boys will just go,
no idea. And I feel, you know, the art of communicating to boys, obviously I learnt that, you know, in my childhood. And it's funny, I can talk to random, like, dads in the street for half an hour about some things about their parenting and their, and they say, how come I can't talk to my wife like that? And I said, because you're really worried about upsetting her and I'm not in an intimate relationship with you and you don't want to muck up and you're quite sensitive but you can't tell her because you're supposed to be the hero. And there's all these things, that, all of that. And I went, yeah, I know, right? It's essentially we come from slightly different places even though we love each other or love our kids. But we can see things very differently, partly due to the imprints from childhood, but also there's this pragmatism in guys, and that's why so often, you know, I'll hear a dad sort of saying, just chill, love. And he's right. You can chill a bit, dude. Like you're really going off your deep end and catastrophizing right now because that's what girls are wired to do and women.
Yep.
Whereas dad goes, no, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Mm. And I think that's why we're, you know.
I'm just playing. That absolutely happens in our family as well.
Yeah, Maggie, when I'm in the, like, yes, so the support around boys, particularly in this part, is vital. How do we also hold, you know, like the growth aspect as well? Like we obviously support, but we also want them to grow through it and develop and build those capabilities. Is it a matter of us putting our brain in place for them? What's the step to try and also get the growth occurring as well as supporting them and being that person to vouch for them as well?
Yeah, it's really interesting that boys are not responsive to lectures.
Mm.
And to great words of advice, even though you have hard-earned them and they're probably quite good.
Yep.
What they are wired for is genuine, true stories from people who've probably just done what they have done. Or maybe you can take a story out of, you know, the media about what something a boy did and say, what would you do if, you know, that happened while you were there? And then they can play it out in their own mind because one of my favourite lines with as boys get older is what would you do if? And so if they are off to the party, I want to say what would you do if there were some gate crashes that were much older than you guys?
Yep.
Or what would you do if one of your friends fell to the floor and you weren't sure if they were in an alcoholic coma or they're asleep? Because 9 times out of 10, they actually have already thought about it and they will give you a pretty good response. And then you can say, might be also, can I add one more thing? And they're much more likely to take your next point on.
Yep.
But if you go, this is what you do, they just turn off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and yet they do that mainly with parents. But they don't tend to do it with lighthouse figures.
Yep.
So sometimes the lighthouse figure is a significant adult ally. And so my boys had some at school. And so if one of mine was not handing their work in and being a bit of a poop head, I would have a little chat to that teacher, because I used to teach with them, and say, look, this is what's going on. He said, I'll leave it with me. And they'll go and have a little chat saying, I've just noticed you're not handing as much work in. Is there something going on? They do my advocacy work and they respond to them, because, again, it has to be someone they respect. But it's not coming from mum and not coming from dad, because that often is seen as criticism. Mm. And then they bunker down and just get really wounded and get moody, and then you'll get more what ifs, I don't know, who cares?
Yep. Mm. And that lighthouse person in at Villanova here in grade 9, we have a Right Journey program.
Yes, which is, you know, rite of passage programs.
And we talk a lot about mentors and having someone, that isn't your parents, or that isn't in a position of power.
Yep.
That they're able to support and provide that.
I think they're also the ones that sometimes invite a big question, you know, and I know within the rites of passage programs, quite often they have an opportunity to sit and think, what sort of man do I want to be? And also I like the one that says, you know, what is it that you can do one day that could make the world a better place? Because I think that's what we're here for. What that says is you don't have to all be brain surgeons or like with amazing big careers with academia. It also means that there are boys who are into the arts who, you know, can find a way that they create fantastic music or songs or paint. Mm. I feel we need to do that more, because the world kind of, you know, and we all know that within schools, the pressure's on, you know, it was there when I was teaching, but it's got way worse. that you're not defined by your final grades in year 12, and that anyone can go back and start again. But also, what can you do that can make the world a better place? Because you can probably do it today. You might help one of your mates who's struggling. You might make your mum a cup of tea. You might help raise some funds for a really good charity. Mm. When you sow all those seeds into an emerging future man, they take them on board. But if no one's sowing the seeds, then they don't tend to germinate into positive pathways to be a man.
And you need a community to do that, don't you?
Definitely.
You? It's the family, it's the teachers, it's the mental lighthouses.
It's the systems. We all live within systems. We've got family systems, school systems, faith systems, we've got, you know, rugby systems. All of these systems are ways of belonging. And our fundamental need as a human is belonging. And so I find that the most vulnerable of our boys are not tethered into belonging anywhere that's positive. So they'll belong somewhere that's risky.
They'll find it somewhere.
It's a fundamental drive. Mm. I will belong where I can, but when we've built the systems that allow them to feel they belong, even while they're at school or outside of school, it makes a world of difference. Mm. It really does. Mm.
And you just hit the nail on the head, Maggie, when you said, you know, it can't always be about academia. I mean, yes, that's the core function of schools and that's important, but it's not just about ATAR results and test results. What we're trying to do is make them be good men. Simple.
Oh. Well, I think what we've lost in this, and remember, this isn't what teachers have chosen or school leaders, this is our education systems, that we've pushed testing and accountability and sucked the life force out of something else that no one goes into teaching for the holidays or the pay. We go in because we have a burning desire to want to help kids
make
grow.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the people-making aspect that we've sucked the life force. That we can help shape the character or the potential of a child while we teach them, doesn't matter what it is, woodwork, English, whatever. But there's so much more going on with the way that we interact, the way we have conversations, the way we listen to each other, the way that we model how to be the good human we want them to grow up to be. And that, I feel, it's just become so difficult with all the overload that exhausted teachers haven't got the same amount of energy. Like when I was still teaching, I used to go and play basketball at lunchtime with for three lunchtimes a week with rat bag boys and all sorts of things, because I didn't realise I could actually play. There's nothing like convincing a bunch of boys who don't like English that my turnaround jump shot
was lethal.
Yeah.
You need to respect this woman.
But we can't do it now because it's shortened and there's too much on and you've got paperwork and emails and everything else and the data sets and the
bits. Yeah. So what are the qualities that we need to nurture in our boys the most to ensure that when they graduate they are confident, capable, well-adjusted, all those things? What are, give us your top three things.
I think the first one is our boys need to be able to understand that everyone makes mistakes and that in actual fact sometimes failure can be a really great moment of reflection to see, you know, is this to do with my effort or am I going in the wrong direction or am I needing more support from whoever it is? So I think we need to let failure be not the enemy because it's so linked to self-worth. Boys hate failing because, of course, that means they attack themselves and we don't see that. We just see them get angry and defensive. I think that's the first one is that we need to honour failing and celebrate it in lots of ways. Mm-hmm. I think the second one I'd like to think is incredibly important is we have to talk about character. We have to talk about what is it to have character that is somebody who we can rely on and look up to or, you know, trust in those moments. And that's why, you know, I find the, you know, rites of passage programs are so good, but I also find when boys get to spend time with quality men around campfires or in opportunities where they can hear genuine stories of other men's pathways, if they can remember their adolescence, that'd be good. But, you know, hardship. I think our boys need to know that hard things are going to happen in life, not just failure, but we're going to miss opportunities and we're going to have the injury just before the grand final, that these are big emotional moments and that what we do is we don't shut down or just get angry. We can lean on others and we can have help-seeking behaviours around those things and that's that safe person again.
And then that they can get over these things.
You will get through these. Yeah. And there are so many, you know, I've worked with a number of boys when I was counselling who, you know, that they're absolute elite. You know, this guy was, you know, he was going to be, you know, the next Rob DiCostello really and Tory's ACL, you know, just before the Nationals. And he, within 2 or 3 weeks, had dropped his girlfriend. He'd stopped going to school. He wouldn't talk to his mum and dad. And when I worked with him, it was because all of those feelings were blocked inside him. So one of the things, this is the last part of that, is that big feelings can overload nervous systems for boys. And often talking does not necessarily help like it does with females.
Girls. Mm.
As I've found in a lot of working with men after tragic things like, you know, natural disasters and things. What often takes time is often using that to move the energies, particularly boys, run it out. Or,
so
yes,
be physical.
Yeah, shift it through the body. So, in other words, it comes out as an energy that you don't hurt anyone else with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my most beautiful stories was a beautiful boy who was one of my boy's best mates who's mum was killed in a motorbike accident. And he, you know, he was, yeah, it was just really, he was, that, the dad had already died. And I said to him at one point, just run until you can't run anymore and tell me how far it is. And so when he first started doing it, he was running 8 or 9 Ks before he collapsed in the dirt. And then it was only 5 Ks. And then it was, right? And
yep.
So we're honouring that grief and big feelings of disappointment are a part of being human, not because you're weak,
mm-hmm.
but you can shift it without necessarily becoming aggressive towards others or hurting yourself. But it's normal. And normalizing those big hot moments, I feel, would help so many of our boys and men.
And you got a book coming out in about a month's time, is that right? What was it called again, sorry?
Digital Freedom. Okay. Yeah, no, I co-wrote it, so it's technically not all my book.
Take the credit, mate.
We will say Kira.
Kira, yeah.
Yeah, Kira Pendergast, yeah. So what we wanted to do was help parents to have more tools to be the digital educator in the home because you can have digital people come and talk to your kids, once a year. Well, it's moving so fast and they cannot cover it in an hour and a half.
Yep. And they'll forget about it anyway.
Yeah, so we want, and most parents don't want to come because they know they're losing the battle at home, right?
And it's just
So what I guilt. we wanted to create we want to, where the first chapter is pretty hard because that's the harm. We go through exactly all the harm that's happening. So you can't sit back and say, oh, no, that's not too bad. It is horrendous. And then I wanted to know, as an educator, are we dumbing our kids down with tech? Right. And so basically the book goes through quite a few of these things. But what it says is it's not all bad, but yep. it's not all good.
Yep.
I, queen of common sense, I want to show the bits that, right. And then we get to, you know, we explore how algorithms work, because when our kids understand how they work, they can then manipulate them in a better way. We don't have to ban them from all sorts of things, even though I'm absolutely a fan of our social media delay, because I think we put a line in the sand that says, nah, the later the better.
Yep.
And I feel that's the message we need. And of course, we've now triggered the whole world, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get on to things like, how do you connect safely online if you are possibly marginalized groups, right? Mm. Because we know there's enormous support for those who actually may not find their own people in their normal community. And then we've moved into the best chapter is the last one. It talks very much about how the tide is turning, and it is really turning. So we land the book on hope.
Right.
But the idea is we work with our kids to work out how we both navigate it better, because a lot of parents are struggling with their addiction to the phone. We're going to work with setting our own boundaries up. We're going to work at, you know, what do we do when bad stuff happens? It's very specific, exactly the steps you do, but that won't just be in your home. Your kid will see that and be able to teach one of their friends who gets into mess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel we're just giving a whole lot of incredibly important information. There's no blaming of parents, no blaming of teachers, and no blaming of kids. I'm sick of that happening.
Yep.
Tech is the thing to blame.
Yep.
So,
but
we need
actual specific things that are gonna we can go home and implement straight away.
With
this book, I've already got one.
Yeah, I know.
Listen, we're out of time, but just to wrap it up, if every parent and every teacher listening today remembered just one message from your presentation, what would it be, Maggie?
I think it's probably that either gender deserves to be valued and respected, that we need to stop talking about boys and men in such negative ways, because I believe both of them have an absolute rightful place, and when they're working well, we're all great. I feel that shifting some of the conditionings that we still see, that girls are weak and boys are, you know, tough, when we disintegrate those, we start to see that every child, boy or girl, is yearning to find that they have at least one safe human who loves them, that they're being given opportunities to work out who they are and how we can let them be whoever they're meant to be, not necessarily how the world tells them they need to be. And that, I know that's too many, but I still think it, the final one is...
Keep going if you want.
The final one is that, you know, the no matter what one is important, because there is, you know, every home will be having the same hiccup moments that I had in the 80s. Except there's a lot more digital stuff. But we're always, parenting is bumpy, but I need you to trust that your kids are actually way more capable than you give them credit for, even your 3- and 4-year-old, and that we need to give them opportunities for what I call autonomy and freedom instead of containing them in a way we think will keep them. Probably too big an answer.
No, it's not.
Perfect answer. That's
amen.
What we're after.
Amen to that. If we could all just go home and do that, we'll all be great.
And also,
no
we're going to muck up, they're going to muck up, and let's land on love and laughter. That's the best.
Love
one.
And laughter. Love there and it laughter. Is right
there it is. And that's our wrap up. Do we have any play out music?
We don't, but we could.
You were all over the
No, I was trying to, I was just, you know, I was trying to make the moment. But look, I think.
Thanks, Maggie.
I love the what if chat. I think I'm going to take that on board. Definitely getting movement and letting them express themselves physically, particularly in the emotional aspect.
And I'm taking away the no matter what.
Yeah.
Even if my son like does something, and you know, I won't go into the details, but there is some stupid stuff done no matter what.
So I've got beautiful no matter what posters you can download off my website. You put them everywhere, and they're going to go, "What are these posters for?"
Yeah, Mom, what's this? It's so cringe. Well,
yeah,
no matter
cringe.
What. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Maggie,
but I
thank
call
you.
It sick.
That's perfect. Thank you, Maggie, for being our lighthouse
today. Oh, well done, Justin.
I thought I'd get that in there.
Look at how you just slipped that in. That's very nice.
Yeah, it's an honour to have you obviously here and speaking at for the Villanova community.
It really is.
And no, we're grateful for that opportunity. And hopefully all the listeners as well can take some things out of this as well and get on board for some lighthouses of themselves.
Exactly.
And find some great people that are already within the Villanova community, but also within the home as well. So,
Maggie, you're the GOAT.
I'm a goat.
You're the goat. We love you. Thank you so much. And looking forward to your presentation on Wednesday with our Villa community.
All
and play out music.
Ed, thank you. I don't have one, so just do, 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 do.